Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
My name is Michael Bailey, and you're listening to the EDP Formula One podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the Eastern Daily Press Formula One podcast as we look back at the Austrian Grand Prix and ahead in part two of our podcast, of course, that you'll get in a few days, to the British Grand Prix at Silverstone. Now, we had a couple of technical issues, so apologies. It's going to be a bit of a sporadic start, but let me introduce the panel who are not here at the moment. Perry Hamilton was here, Richard Baxter was here, Dave Tillier, Steve Rust, and Kyle Cumbers. It was a bumper panel with a bumper pod as we looked back to a grand Austrian Grand Prix, the first, of course, back at Spielberg in a number of years. Perry was a little bit late, so we were going to do a sweepstake on how long it would take him to come in. In the end, it was about 1.5 minutes, so that was good. Anyway, I'll allow you to join back with the podcast as if nothing went wrong. So for those who had the sweepstake, the sweepstake on Ped, it's only been like a minute.
What a time.
Those who had the most faith in Ped arriving will have succeeded.
How late am I?
I don't know, really.
Oh, about 15 minutes.
A minute into the recording.
Called it.
So you're fine. Austria race. There was a race. It was in Austria. Spielberg. Was it a blockbuster, boys?
Hey, he's been sitting on that, hasn't he?
Oh, dear. I don't know if I really enjoyed the race. I enjoyed the weekend. I liked the track. Just not sure I enjoyed the race.
That's pretty, isn't it?
Correct me, right.
It's a pretty setting. Mm. You know, you could imagine, you know, waking up in your Lederhosen in the morning and stepping out of your Austrian farmhouse to watch the Grand Prix.
I think I enjoyed the up to the first pit stops. I enjoyed that. And then I think after that, I just kind of was like, oh, academic.
It kind of lost its momentum for
it
a bit.
Did.
And then the end picked up a bit again.
It was like a poo sandwich. The poo was in the middle. I can't say sandwich, can I? You have to bleep it out.
So. But you know I will bleep it out.
I know you will bleep it
from
out.
From past experience.
So that's why. Exactly. So, yeah. But now the listeners know what I'm saying. They know it's a poo sandwich, even though you have to bleep out sandwich. So the poo was in the middle, and it was a bit sort of started. I started to drift a bit off of it, and a bit, and then came back towards the end when it got picked up and got a bit more shy.
Gents,
I think the grid position sort of everybody beforehand thought, wow, it's going to be amazing, and then Williams sort of weren't really interested in a race win, so it ended up the normal Mercedes battle really. But I think the grid positions got us excited, but. Didn't live up to that.
Did it end in the normal Mercedes battle? Because I got a sense they were trying to make it interesting, but I couldn't help thinking that it was never really going to happen anyway. It didn't feel like the most tense of finales between the two
Not like Bahrain, really, was it? Or Spain or anything like that. I mean, it just sort of seemed that whilst they allowed Hamilton to just have a bit more power, they ended up same with Rosberg, and you just kind of always felt that it was just going to end the way it was.
Yeah.
It seemed like Hamilton was kind of reluctant to try anything. I think he just wanted to get the haul of points. You know, he's had two DNFs this year. He's probably got a little bit of the worry of the reliability in the back of his head, and thinking maybe if I just cruise along over the line, I'll get him next time and I'll close that gap.
Because that's the only problem, isn't it? He did then lose points to Rosberg again. I mean, ultimately, Rosberg won because he picked up those extra points.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I've got nothing else to say on that.
Fair enough. David Coulthard, he sort of said as the race was winding down, oh no, Hamilton shouldn't go for it. He should just stick, it doesn't, not surprised if he doesn't go for it because he needs these points. Kind of what we've just been saying. But to me, they're just
kind of emphasised why David Coulthard wasn't a world champion.
Yeah.
Cruel?
Oh, I'd agree with that.
I don't know though, but surely he should be pushing everything out to go for it. He needs to start beating Nico Rosberg.
Yeah, fair point. Yeah,
I've still got another half to the season left, so there's plenty more races. Well. And all it takes is if Rosberg fails once and Hamilton wins, that gap's right back up to 3 or 4 points again. So I think it's being conservative earlier on, but then maybe from Silverstone onwards, it should be the time to really push and really try and get the points.
Play the long game.
Yeah.
Play the long
game. We could always remind ourselves of what the great Ayrton Senna once said, which is if you don't go for a gap, you are no longer a racing driver.
Love it. Yeah, eat that, David Coulthard.
Rosberg was under pressure because he locked up on the last lap, didn't he? Which Hamilton got excited about and messed up the corner himself.
Yeah.
Didn't that sum up Hamilton's weekend, though? I mean, qualifying was a right old mess.
Yeah.
But I don't put that necessarily down to Hamilton. That spin that he had was very bizarre. You know, braking in a straight line didn't really appear to lock up. It's almost like as soon as he came on the brakes, it just
spun it round, didn't it?
Yeah.
I read a bit, and they said the Mercedes engineer said he braked sort of on a bump. Mm. So that lifted the rear wheel, and he downshifted, which then locked all up, and that's right. Just a coincidence. It all happened at the same time, and
yeah,
just
probably couldn't do it again if you tried.
Yeah, yeah. At a certain point, he hit the track, and all went wrong at one point.
Whereas Michael Paird and myself, we did it on regular occasions at Heller Park, didn't we?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah,
I managed a casual spin while going in a straight line. It's not a racing session if I don't push it. So.
If you're not pushing, you're no longer a racing driver. Who are in karting?
Was it Andretti? If we're doing quotes, was it Andretti that said if everything seems under control, you're not going fast enough?
I like that quote. I haven't heard it before.
I think that's Andretti. If everything seems under control, you're just not going fast enough. Misspelt on the wall of the place where I spent my holiday, they'd actually written it YOUR, not going fast enough, rather than YOUR.
Oh, I hate bad grammar.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can't
shocking.
Deal with that.
Absolutely shocking. But that was the quote they had painted on the wall.
The championship then, Nico, I mean, most of us I would assume would say Nico isn't the better driver that's at Mercedes. Would we say that?
I'm wonderfully glad that you've brought this up independently, Michael, because I've had this conversation with three different people over the weekend, and that is, if Nico wins the championship, it'll be all about the car. If Lewis wins the championship, it'll be all about the driver. This is the way I'm seeing this go at the moment. If Lewis wins it, it'll be all because he's a great talent, he's a world champion before, it's about time he got another one, he's had it coming, this is the start of a dominant run. There'll be all that talk about Lewis the racer. If Nico wins it, it'll all be talk about Nico and the car. Nico got it because he was in Mercedes at the right time when Mercedes had the right car. If it wasn't for the car, he wouldn't have been a contender. That ultimately, whichever way you spin it, it's the same result. Mercedes have won the championship and one of their drivers wins it. But that's... Mm. I just want to know what people think about
that.
Yeah,
I think it may depend on how he wins it, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
If he has maybe enough DNFs and still wins, then people see it as pretty fair. Maybe, I don't know. Also, we've also got that double points at the end, which...
Mm. Oh, which I've forgotten about that. Don't remember that, Kyle.
But, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. It's a good question. I don't know, really.
Hamilton has put in the... In terms of sort of displays of performance, I think Hamilton has put in more of them. Mm. Rosberg has had consistently good results. That's why he's winning the World Championship. He's not necessarily been stellar all the way through the season. He's just been there or thereabouts.
Yeah. I think it's the existing body of work. Rosberg hasn't been stellar up to this point in his career. He's been solid. He's been dependable. But he's never been that light-up-the-track driver that Lewis has been at times. Lewis was winning races in cars that had no business winning races, and Rosberg's never done that. So I can see it coming from that point, but I just think that if Lewis wins, I don't think enough credit will be given to the car, and if Nico wins, I don't think enough credit will be given to the driver. I mean, it's a catch-22.
Although, isn't it fair to say that because Nico hasn't had two DNFs, he is leading the championship because of the car?
No, I do. I completely agree with you. I'm just saying that's how it's going to be received in the media.
It's
and I hate to say it because I know it's going to hurt a few people around this table, but that's kind of when you look back on it, that's objectively how you have to see Jensen's World Championship year, because Jensen's proven since then that he is not a consistent race-winning threat when in a mid-level or a standard-level car. Braun had the car to dominate the first half of the year and no one could catch up, even though Red Bull looked like they were going to. Jensen won the championship because he was in the best car. He was the better driver in the best car, which is why Rubens didn't win it. but he won it because of the car. And I think the more you see of Jensen's race performances, the more you see that. I don't know how people feel about that as well, because I know Jensen is very revered. Yeah,
taking down two British drivers in one discussion point. That's,
I don't know, I mean, he did show 2010, 2011 especially, and a bit of 2012 as well, that he could, you know, drive the wheels off that car.
He can.
But the problem is,
wheels off any off the car, as long as it suits him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's the thing. I was about to say, it's got to be the right car.
Yeah,
it's a very, you know, if it's not right either way, then it's as well off.
And I love Jensen. I'll put that out. I love Lewis and Jensen. Absolutely, I'm not detracting from them at all. But I'm just talking about how this season may be remembered.
That's the great thing about Formula One, though, is you've got so many different types of drivers all achieving very similar results through completely different styles. And it can, like Alonso is very different to both Hamilton and Button, or Hamilton and Vettel, or whatever, you know.
You know what time it is, DT? What time is it now, do you reckon?
Is it time for some pit stops?
EDP F1 pit stops. Let's start then, shall we? Well, Williams, because while Mercedes kind of did the job in the race, Rich, Williams were the team of qualifying, and did they muck it up in the race, or is that a bit harsh?
Well, I think they started all right, because off the, you know, straight off the start, especially Massa was away, he was in the lead, and Rosberg did get past Bottas, but I think Bottas re-overtook second corner or something like that.
Yeah.
But they were okay up to then. But then when it started to get towards the first pit stops, they started to drop off a bit. Now, I heard a lot of talk about tyre wear and everything, but also I think it was Rob Smedley who said they want a big haul of points. So I don't think they set out saying, right, let's win this race, let's drive tactically to get the win. They thought, realistically, Mercedes aren't our main title contenders. We're racing Force India, who are further back. Let's, you know, get the best result we can, which I think 3-4... you know, was pretty much
as good. Not as bad, is it? Really, but first podium for Valtteri Bottas as well, who I'm a big fan of.
Yeah, he sort of, I don't even know how he
how he did it.
Well, yeah, I just sort of wonder how Massa ended up fourth after the first lot of pit stops. I think it's, they thought Bottas' few laps around the pit stop period.
I think Felipe sort of was questioning the timing of it, wasn't he? They sort of took a bit too long before they came in, and that sort of, and then he came straight out into traffic.
Bottas' in-lap as well, I think, was pretty impressive for the standards of the other laps going on at the same time.
I'm pleased with Bottas. I prefer it. I want him to do better than Massa, because Massa's the past and Bottas is the future. So,
but did we like the nostalgia of Massa on pole?
Massa on pole in a Williams. I mean, how much nostalgia?
Nostalgia-tastic.
At the A1 ring, how much nostalgia can you handle? I think the only thing that made it better were the consistent interspersed shots of Gerhard Berger. I mean, that made my weekend, I think, just seeing Gerhard there, just still jeans and a hoodie. Doesn't care, he's just there, he's just like, yeah, I was alright. I did alright, I was an F1 driver for a number of years. I loved it. I was so happy to see Williams, and I was really happy that it was Massa, because it's his first podium since 2009, when he had his spring in a helmet incident. He hasn't been on pole since then. You know, that's a huge amount of time to go for a driver in a top tier team, which he was in Ferrari, to go. And I think it was Martin Brundle pointed out the beautiful irony of it, that he gets turfed out of Ferrari for Kimi, goes to Williams, who were pretty much nothing last season, wondering how they'd ever stay in the industry, in the business, in the sport, and now suddenly he's putting it on front row of the grid, beating out the Mercedes for pole position.
Well, that's the question, I suppose, isn't it? What happens next? They've had this quick car. They've obviously got a Mercedes engine, which is a huge advantage over the other two, really, at the moment. Can they do anything more than this, or is this where they're at?
It's a solid platform, but they are a much smaller team than Mercedes, McLaren, Ferrari. So whether or not they can develop their car at the same pace remains to be seen. And we all know that the development race throughout the season is ridiculous these days. You know, if you start the season with a great car, you can end up with a mediocre car if you just stand still.
If you look at 2012, for example, they had a race-winning car that season with Maldonado in Spain, and you know, it was a quick car they had, but they just couldn't keep up towards the end. No, you know, just end of the top 10, if not outside the top 10. Mm. And it's going to be interesting to see if they can, if the same happens this year or if they improve it.
I suppose they were done a favour by Red Bull. They kind of mucked up their home race, really, didn't they, Steve?
Well, it was just terrible, wasn't it, for their home race? I mean, they just blamed it all on the engine, which just seemed a bit sour grapes to me.
Unacceptable.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I just think they could have done better than that. And I think it was more their own doings rather than the Renault engine. But, I mean, as for Williams, I think they'll struggle in the next race, if I'm honest. But I think there'll be other circuits where they'll shine it like they did here. Yeah, I think they've got a good package, but I don't think it's a complete package where it'll work, you know, consistently, you know, like the sort of Mercedes, etc., and that will do.
We'll have a poke around Silverstone in part two. Sebastian Vettel, kind of amusing, really, his post-qualifying and post-race interviews is... It's almost like he's sort of giggling and shrugging, going, ha, what on earth do you expect me to do with this? Slowly, beep. Okay. I mean, you turned it off and on again, and it seemed like that might work. But classic IT work, really.
Yeah, this one.
It's funny he's getting all the bad luck.
It is. Are we agreeing it's all, it is
yeah,
funny?
I laughed.
I did as well.
When he went out, I
you horrible
laughed.
People.
Yeah, I think I might have said something worse than just laughing.
I did feel a bit sorry for him, actually.
There you go, Carl. That's more like it. Human feeling.
There's something I noticed as well. When his car broke, he pulled over and stopped. And then the pack came round and he was being lapped. And then he pulled away again into the pack. And at that corner, he had the inside line, but someone ran wide.
I think it was
Ricciardo ran.
Ricciardo.
So he lost a place of Toro Rosso.
He did, yeah.
Should he not have got a penalty for rejoining in the pack? Should he not have given way to the car's lapping?
Probably, yeah. You just pleased it was running.
Well, yeah. Oh, it's working. What's going on? It was sort of Ayres' problems, really, wasn't it? I think that neither... I mean, Sebastian Vettel obviously retired, about a third in the end? It was quite early, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Still beautiful.
Daniel... Now, everyone is calling him Ricardo. So I've decided maybe rather than say the I in his surname, I should not say the I in his first name. So I'll just call him Daniel Ricciardo because the whole thing's stupid. But anyway, that's not the point.
Danny Rick.
Ricciardo. I can't bring myself to do it. He put in a, considering he didn't have Ayres all race, it was a very decent for him to pick up any points because that's a huge amount of power he's losing on every lap.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're seeing sort of real quality. I mean, I know you asked the last time that we were talking about Daniel Ricciardo, you asked, was it form or was it class? And I still maintain it's form. He's hit a good vein of it. He's running well. He's getting all the luck, which let's not forget. If, you know, all the luck was going equally, then Vettel would probably be on better footing. But it's not. He is getting all the luck. But you've got to ride that luck when it comes your way. He's doing exactly that. He's putting in really good performances.
Brilliant stuff. We'll keep our fingers crossed for him. There was a nice bit where from Tom... what's his surname? Clarkson. Tom Clarkson off of the BBC, who's doing a pre-race interview with Daniel. And he told Daniel that five times as many people have been in space as have won a Formula One Grand Prix.
Yeah, I was a bit surprised by that.
It is a bit of a surprise. And Daniel's face, yeah. He was like, whoa! It was like his world had changed. So five times as many people have been in space... as have won Formula One Grand Prix. Great stat. It's a great stat. Mm. And credit to Tom. You know, I mean, producer may have given it to him, but still, you know.
I think it just means that we're sending too many people into space.
Well, that is a lot of people.
That's a lot of people. Curb that down. What else is there to find out there? How far do you think you can go?
I mean, it could have been wrong. I'm assuming that it was correct.
Well, the BBC's coverage has slipped.
Let's not dig it again. We dig them out every fortnight. I'm starting to feel a bit bad about it now.
I did like, actually, I have to say, for the BBC, one point due, because when Martin Brundle was trying to interview Massa on the grid, he had to bail out of interviewing Massa to fill time whilst waiting to interview Massa while Rubens was interviewing him. He interviewed DC, and he actually asked DC who DC thought was going to win. And DC went along with it. I thought it was great. It was just like, Mark Bond was like, on my grid walk, I'll talk to David Coulthard. And David Coulthard went with it. And it's just like, well done, BBC.
Did he say, well. Yeah, fair enough. Did Martin say that it was BBC pundit, or did
he said he's DC, and then he just said to him, "Oh, you know, I don't think we're going to get in there." And they had a bit of banter, and then he just went, "So, DC, who do you think's going to win?" Because to be fair, he had been messing around that Massa area for quite a while without anything interesting. I was about to fast forward past the grid walk and just think, you know, forget it, because I was watching it on my court.
That's quite a poor grid walk for.
Quite a poor grid walk, yeah. And I don't care if James Dyson's there. I really don't care.
Is he Patrick Head's cousin?
Is he?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Is that?
Yeah. Pass. There you
go. Kyle's bringing in the fact that it's now, isn't he?
A poor Brundle grid walk is still better than the thing that Eddie Jordan has done on the grid.
Oh, God, yeah.
another BBC dig. Right. Force India. The whole Perez Massa incident did kind of drag on into Austria from Canada. The bit that probably annoyed me is the fact that the stewards upheld the verdict, which was that Perez would be given a 5-place grid penalty, yet decided that from now on, actually, that sort of thing will probably be a racing incident. So it needs to be a bigger change of line for it to have a penalty in future. So is that not sort of saying, well, yeah, you are right, but we're not going to change our minds?
It seems a bit harsh, doesn't it?
So, and the relationship, if you can call it that, between Massa and Perez seemed to be quite. Mm-hmm.
But it is annoying that Perez thinks he's in the right, though, because you know, you look at the footage back and no one else would have done that.
Yeah, that's something like it. There's always somebody to blame now, isn't there?
Yeah,
there's always somebody's fault, and sometimes it's just.
Just with that Chilton incident with Bianchi, two of us just thought, well, you just lost the back end coming through the corner and you just hit the nearest car, which happened to be your teammate, and there was all a big hoo-ha about that. And
well, he got a 5-place deduction for that, didn't
he? See, ridiculous.
I just thought that's a racing incident as well. Sometimes you're going to lose control of your car accidentally. It's like, they're not all perfect,
and there'll probably be a car near you when you do it, because that tends to happen. Anyway, there was a little bit of tension when I think Massa came up behind Perez, wasn't there? How is this going to go? But I think it passed out fine. Quick one at Toro Rosso. Do we know why Daniil Kvyat had his right rear smashed in? What happened there? Did anyone see anything? I never saw it.
It was on almost like a 45-degree angle pointing away from the car, wasn't it?
It was like it completely smashed. But then
it was off.
Yeah.
It just collapsed.
It must have done something with it.
Yeah, it must have been suspension fade or something,
Well, look, they did say something about a puncture, so whether it punctured and then it took something out...
Yeah.
Which then made the suspension go, I don't know. But.
Crazy nuts. Caterham. Now, Jules Bianchi had the better of Kamui Kobayashi again, which is a bit of a shame. And I suppose this all comes off the back of Caterham obviously struggling. Bernie Eccleston has effectively said, well, if you can't afford to be in Formula 1 as a team, then get yourselves out. What are you doing here? Which is all very well. It's just the only issue is that Marussia and Caterham arrived thinking there was going to be a £50 million... budget cap, which of course isn't even close to happening. I'm wondering how this is all going to end badly.
For who? For us or for them? I mean, let's be honest. They don't add anything, do they? Do they add anything to the enjoyment of the sport?
Yeah, only in numbers, I think.
Yeah, exactly. I think they add a third qualifying session. That's all they add. Yeah. Like, let's be honest.
When they picked up their points, everyone was pleased, I think. And it was, whoa, you know, Marussia got points. And, you know, you made it more exciting. But the reason they picked up points was really a lot of luck, because it's Canada. Like, was it 11 cars or something retired? And kind of all flipped around.
I think if they're bringing in young drivers, then they've got a purpose, I suppose. And then them drivers can then move on to bigger teams. Like the old Minardi team, but I mean, it's nice to have. We've got 22 cars. You know, 22, 24 is quite a good number.
I agree. But I'd like those teams to be a bit more. I mean, okay, if there was a third or a fourth team back there that they were competing with, it's fine. It's just those same four cars battling each other, and I couldn't care less.
Well, we've got Sauber are dramatically close, I suppose, too close for their liking to the new teams. We know that we're going to have Haas.
Yeah.
F1 and possibly a Colin Collis entry as well at some point if they get their licence. And they're not going to just be added on to the number of teams, are they?
Is there space? I mean, I wonder whether or not there should be like a tier based system like they have in GT racing, whether or not, you know, you've got your top teams that have all their big budgets and all their interesting technologies, and then you have
Privateers Cup.
Your privateers teams, which they have a you know, nice cost cap and, you know, shared technologies, maybe. Standardised vehicles.
I mean, it's something that happens in bike racing and certainly in lots of other places.
You know, the difficulty for that in Formula One is the speed of the bigger teams and how many times they're going to get laps. And we've seen incidents in the past where the leader or the two leaders fight for position and there's a lapped car on the way, and it's always been below.
But my counter to that would be that at the Nürburgring 24 they have GT3 class cars which are flying around overtaking diesel hatchbacks, and there's 200 and something cars on track at any one time. And they manage it okay at the Nürburgring.
I don't think it's a question of logistics and managing it. I think it's a question of the purity of the sport. You pay to see Formula One. You pay to see the best teams in the world. I don't want the best teams and then their little brothers running around the kit. If I wanted that, I'd watch Touring Car. I'd watch GP2. I'd watch Formula E that's coming up. I'd watch all of that rubbish. I don't watch that. I watch F1.
All of that rubbish.
Quote unquote. I don't watch all of that. I watch Formula One because Formula One are the best teams in the world and the best drivers in the world, and that's the way it should be.
Would you
prefer like 8 teams with 3 cars?
Oh, now Kyle's talking.
Ferrari are desperate to have their third driver.
I think it probably would actually. Yeah.
This year's championship, you'd have 3 drivers probably.
Fair point.
What I want to see is more manufacturers come back to the sport, because they're important for more than one reason. The reason why we've had so many different driver changes at all the smaller teams is because they don't have the money to compete and different drivers bring more money. Whereas with the manufacturers, they're able to pick talent over money. And I want to see more manufacturing teams come back to the sport.
Who would you like to see come back?
Ford.
Interesting.
Honda? BMW?
Jaguar? I drive a Jaguar. Why would no one want to see this?
No one wants to see Jaguar.
Well, maybe
again, I mean, Lotus. I mean, Lotus are a manufacturer team. Effectively, they've got the badge, they've got the name, they've got the look, and they can't. They have to sell for Maldonado.
You look at how much money Volkswagen have got, and how many different firms they own. They could easily have the money to compete
without even noticing it.
Yes, they have an enormous amount.
And I think that it would just be hilarious if they did it under the Skoda brand. Like, use Audi engines, use everything you want. It's all Skoda. Use it under the Skoda brand.
We bring a serious point up and we get an off-tangent.
And their white and green colour scheme as well. It's pretty cool.
Of course, Renault. Yeah,
Renault a few years ago as well. They were sponsored by Lada.
Yeah.
Good old Petrov. And that worked.
What about Apple Formula 1, like IF1?
No.
Okay, whoa. We should just mention Lotus because we didn't last week. I've got here Lotus - Anonymous.
Grosjean, great guns in quali. Grosjean always looks stronger than Maldonado in quali, and like he's finally got a grip on the car. And then come race day,
car's doing nothing, no reliability.
Absolutely.
Maldonado finished though, and he didn't crash all weekend, I don't think.
And I got a point for that.
Whoa, easy on the prediction stuff, Steve. But Richard, you have taken me on to a little break. Because we can do the of the weekends, driver and goat of the weekend. Obviously, goat won't be passed to Maldonado because he finished and he didn't crash. He didn't do anything. Well, maybe he's the driver of the weekend because he didn't do anything. Who wants it, driver of the weekend?
I'll start first if you want. I'm actually going to put down Bottas.
Okay.
Yeah. You know,
first podium.
I think he was nice, quiet race, but solid race. He outdid his teammate. He kept the Mercedes keen, if you like. Solid podium, really.
I love it.
Thoroughly deserved.
Yeah, I wouldn't stray too far from that.
Yeah.
I'm going to go a little different on driver. I'm going to go Fernando Alonso. Fernando Alonso, in a dog of a Ferrari, puts it fourth on the grid and brings it home in fifth. His teammate brings it home in tenth. All you've got to do at the moment is give Fernando Alonso a half-decent car, and he'll be pulling down thirds and seconds. Imagine if he was in a Williams. Not even in a Merc. Imagine if he was in a Williams. Imagine if he was in a Red Bull. I mean, not for this race, but which will bring me on to my goat in a minute. But I mean, the guy's but he's finding that consistency again, but he's doing it all under the radar, which we're used to Fernando making a big deal out of the fact that he's not winning, not competing, or when he is winning and he's competing again, he's making that. But this is all under the radar for Fernando, so I'm going to give it to him. I think he did a really good job this weekend, and I think that it just must be so hard for him to go out there and keep doing stuff like this with no payoff and no reward for it. I mean, obviously, well, he's getting paid, yeah, I understand that. But he's a racing driver, he wants to win. He doesn't want to go out there and run around and get paid. He wants to go out there and win.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I've got Perez, 15th on the grid to 6th. Led the race for quite a while, quite comfortably as well.
So, yeah, especially off the back of what happened in Canada.
Yeah, so he had a good race. So.
I like that.
I'm going to have to give it to Alonso for all the reasons that Ped gave, because they were all the reasons I had in my head.
Nicely!
I've missed you, DT. Boom. I've missed you.
That's nicely done. Richard?
I was going to split because I thought for qualifying, simply for the one lap, was Massa. I thought that was brilliant. You know, then for the race, I think really Hamilton, even though he had a poor qualifying, just for that first lap, we went from 9th to 4th.
Oh, yeah.
I was just like, amazing. Wow, you know, because you know, Casale was in a quicker car. But
that start was just rocket.
That's it, yeah. Mm.
Fair enough. All right, then. Goat of the weekend?
I'm just going to give it to Red Bull as a brand. Because
having lavished this lovely track,
only one of your sponsored cars finishes and doesn't even finish on a podium. I mean, where did he bring it home? Where did Daniel brought his car home in 8th, and every other car bearing your branding did not cross the finish line. That's an embarrassment. That's an absolute failure. Yeah, you probably had all kinds of fun stuff going on all over the weekend, and that massive ball was probably everywhere. Everyone was high on energy drinks. You brought Mark Webber back, which was amazing, and I loved it. But at the end of the day, you failed to perform, and you failed miserably.
It was all bull.
It was all bull. Good work, Michael.
And didn't someone put a Mercedes badge on the giant bull outside the track?
Oh, I did.
That's a Mercedes logo on the bull or something. Ooh,
that's genius. Like that is brilliant.
This is quite funny because this, I think Tech Rabbit said that in like Mercedes press releases, they didn't mention the Red Bull ring. It was just the Austrian Grand Prix or whatever, obviously, because their sponsorship for Monster probably doesn't allow them
to. Fantastic.
Yeah, which I thought was quite funny.
That's the way to do it. Mm. Any others? Any other goats? Oh,
Jenson Button. Didn't have a great race.
No, and he did all right in qualifying, wasn't he? Was he in right in qualifying? I can't remember.
No,
he wasn't all right in qualifying at all. Oh, he was 12th, wasn't he? And on the, I think in qualifying.
He was 11th, yeah.
And he got told on the radio, and he's like, just like, yes, Jensen, that's what we were all saying as well.
That was a nice little run, though, in quali, wasn't it? Because I think Lewis, world champion, 10. Jensen, former world champion, 11. Seb, four-time world champion,
was, yeah.
12. Nice little run of three cars, and obviously, grid penalty shifted it all around. But nice little run, really nice little run.
I actually had Hamilton as goat on the weekend, which is sort of at odds with you, just for the bits and bobs. It felt like he just didn't quite get it right, and it's a bit of that pressure creeping in, and you want him to go for it at the end, but I think you probably win me over, to be honest, because he did turn things around early on in the race. And Vettel, obviously, because it's just not happening for him, but that's not really his fault.
But to be fair, in return, Hamilton, with the way he's, you know, the car is and the way he drives, he should have, you know, been top three at least in qualifying. He should have nailed it, so that was a bit foolish.
That cost him those points in the race, didn't it, ultimately?
I don't know why they didn't give him 2 laps on his last go, just so, okay, you may qualify 4th because your tyres might be gone, but
get a lap in.
They said the issues of heating up the tyres as well, it takes a couple
of
laps.
Yeah. So. It's a short lap, isn't it? So,
yeah.
Could give it a go.
Well, maybe you should give it to Mercedes then, or, you know, the shared engineering and strategy work, which really doesn't seem to be working. Right. This idea of, oh, it's your turn this week and then it'll be your turn next week. Yeah. Come on, this is a serious operation with 2 world championship title contenders in it. Give them one each.
Oh, that was funny there, wasn't it? Yeah, Rosberg's lap. Hamilton's yellow flag. Yeah, a little mention of that in his after qualifying.
We'll keep hearing about that. Do you want to add anything, Steve? Are you happy with?
No, yeah, I completely agree with what Ped said, actually. But I was initially thinking the Mercedes pit crew didn't exactly have the greatest of pit stops. They were some of the slowest.
Considering
Hamilton lost a couple of seconds really in pit stops to Rosberg, and he finished a couple of seconds behind him. It could have been a bit more of an interesting race if they had the same sort of times of pits. Yeah.
That was quite interesting because I think, I can't remember if it was the first or second set of pit stops, but there was not much between Hamilton and Rosberg when they came out.
Yeah,
and Hamilton wasn't far behind, so you think if that was, you know, take a second off it, that could have, what could well have been there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of pit stops, I know Ped just made a point. Was it, did you say Williams?
I think it was Williams pulled out a 2.1 second
yes,
pit stop.
Yes, I think that's probably a record now.
Isn't mental.
But it came up orange on the screen. No, it comes up green when it's the fastest one of the race, isn't it?
Yeah.
Fastest pit stop. But I saw it come up 2.1. I was like, well, who got faster than 2.1?
Yeah, apparently Red Bull, on the Sky commentary, they said, Ted Kravitz again, he said the world record is this is 1.9 something seconds officially in the Guinness Book of World Records.
How is that even possible?
Is that just, is that just in like a set condition where the car rolls in, they go vroom, vroom, but it's not during a Grand Prix? The record should be during a Grand Prix, you know, and with all the pressure and all of that coming into you.
It might be. I mean, you're only talking about 2/10, aren't you?
Maybe they're all hopped up.
Oh, what's 2/10 between friends when you're doing a pit stop, Michael?
The amount they practice, ridiculous. Team of the weekend, just briefly.
Williams.
Yeah, give it to Williams.
I'd agree with that.
Front row for the first time in a long time. Pass off to him.
Highlight.
Qualifying.
Yeah, that's what I had. That's always a bit sad then, isn't it? Because it means the race wasn't very good. But I don't know if that's not true. But it was good.
I think Lewis's start was a bit of a good highlight for me. Yeah, and Bottas reclaiming second from Rosberg. So, I mean, I said the start was fantastic up to there. So that would be my highlight.
Quite a few funny radio messages to Kimi Raikkonen, wasn't it? He had 2/10 and he just came back and said, give me more power then. And Lewis getting told it's hammer time.
That was hilarious. Yeah. I did laugh at that.
What was that one, if anyone missed it?
He's given radio message from his race engineer, it's hammer time.
Right.
It was right at the end, wasn't it?
Is that because he calls himself Lewis the Hammer Hamilton?
Is it something? Hammer's a mother.
Hammer?
Dolly Dolly.
I don't understand what
Mother Beep. Fudger.
Right.
By the way, did anyone notice
it's all
the...
It's very weird, isn't it?
Hasn't it?
Did anyone notice the sort of teammate embrace between Hamilton and Rosberg at the end of the race?
Yeah,
I did. It was terrible, wasn't it?
I thought it was so overplayed. Like, they literally sort of...
That doesn't sound like them.
They sort of just... They kind of like... It was such an aggressive kind of like hug, you know? At the end of like a... Like a American football match, you can imagine them kind of sort of like bumping chests and doing that sort of. But
I stab people.
Well,
I don't know, because at the end of Bahrain, when Rosberg struggled to get past Hamilton, he did kind of charge at him and kind of bundle him a bit.
It was like copying that, wasn't it?
Exactly. Yeah.
But Lewis probably isn't as good at it, I would imagine, because that's how. Well,
did anyone pick up on the next bit where they go into that little room?
He blanked.
And they just, the pair of them were blanking each other. It wasn't a case of one or the other. They were just blanking each other.
I think Lewis said congratulations to Valtteri.
Yeah, he was chatting to him,
but he wasn't talking to Rosberg, and Rosberg wasn't talking to him.
Well, they'd already done their mock rugby tackle by then. They'd already got it. One of my highlight. You mentioned that Mark Webber was there. He was on the BBC coverage straight after Q1. Sebastian Vettel really struggling, and then obviously Susie's like, so Mark, what do you make of Sebastian's struggles? Just imagine Mark going, yeah, we kept it straight, he did very well. Right, I think we're done then. Done. Yeah. Lovely job. Alright then, we'll be back in a bit to look ahead to the British Grand Prix at Silverstone, which is always obviously tremendously exciting. Usual drill for all the latest news on Caterham and Lotus, my Formula One column, and this very podcast is at edp24.co.uk/F1. And there's obviously the EDPF1 Twitter handle, which is at EDPF1. And me, which is at Michael J. Bailey. Ped.
At PedHD56.
That's him for Twitter. DT.
That's Dave Tullier.
Steve passes the buck to Kyle.
At KCumbers.
And Richard.
At Bax_Kid.
Lovely job. So say hello if you want to. No pressure, obviously. We'll be back in a little bit to look ahead to Britain. Until then, bye for now.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever.
Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
If the world were like a Sleep Number mattress, everything would adapt for your comfort. Because as your life changes and your body changes, Sleep Number mattresses adapt and shift to give you personalized comfort night after night. And now everything's on sale during our Memorial Day event. Save up to $1,200 on mattresses for a limited time. To experience a whole new world of comfort, visit a Sleep Number store or go to sleepnumber.com. Sleep Number, to a good life's sleep.